This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 41.
Leg spin versus fielding. Coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show this week, we talk about the tricks of coaching leg spin, what to do if you're a leggy with a high-pressure match and you don't quite know how to bowl, and diving. Is it all the same, no matter what level you're at and what type of terrain you're playing on? All that and more on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. The clock's ticked round again and it's time for another Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. My name is David Hinchliffe. I am the Grand Poobah at Pitch Vision Towers. And joining me, as always, on the line from Millfield School, Director of Cricket Coaching, and of course, the big enchilada, it's Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garris.
Well, welcome. Another very fine introduction. Many thanks for that.
Well, you need a proper introduction, you know, and we've got to make sure that everybody who's listening, anyone who's just started tuning in this week, there'll be someone tuning in this week who's never listened before. They need to know who you are and what you do, and there's no better way of summing up than calling you the big enchilada. So last week we had some big news, of course, for Pitch Vision and for Cricket South Africa, in that the Cricket South Africa Development Centre, the Elite Development Centre in Pretoria, is getting a big upgrade, and a big part of that big upgrade is that Pitch Vision is being installed throughout the entire facility to track everything that the batsmen do, that the bowlers do, and to record that data. Now that is a big trend in sport generally, isn't it? The idea of having a lot of data to sift through and analyse and be able to pick things out, Gareth. So where do you think this is going to help Cricket South Africa in their aim to develop test and limited over international cricketers?
Well, I think it's going to help hugely. And the thing that I'm interested in is their deployment of it, because obviously it's going to help the top end because they'll be able to go into the centre, be able to bowl and bat and get some feedback on what they're doing. But I think the most important thing for me is in talent identification, really. So it will be in all of the programs that they've got going, both in their talent ID from the age of 12 up to 15, and then their talent development, which will take their 15-year-olds and the best 15-year-olds through to an under-19 World Cup and then hopefully beyond. And in a few years' time, you should anticipate that they'll have a huge amount of data that they could put into a research project that could come out with some really informed information of how people have developed, what the ramifications from a coaching point of view are, and then that can be replicated again and again in each generation of South African cricketers. And I'd be very excited if I was a young South African cricketer now, because it would ultimately mean that it won't be down to opinion so much on whether you're identified in the first case and then developed in the second case, but your match performances and now your practice performances will all be there to support your growth through the cricket structure that's in the country.
And what kind of things can you see this being used for? I mean, bowler's workload is something that obviously springs to mind straight away.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a real topic, to try and avoid the spiking of it, because every ball will be recorded, so you'll get an idea of the volumes. And as much as we try and keep track of that in normal sessions without something like Pitch Vision, it's very difficult when we've got 20 cricketers around us to actually keep a track of what everybody's doing. And there's been different methods tried down the years, but it's not a fail-safe method, whereas the system that they're going to have now will make sure that happens. And also, working out paces as people develop. And we've spoken a lot on this show about players like Stephen Finn, who had a lot of what Kevin Shine in England would call the fast bowling indicators at the age of 15, yet because his body hadn't fully developed and his leg strength and his core strength hadn't fully developed, he wasn't able to put those good key performance indicators into top paces. So it's informed us that that we need to be patient with fast bowlers. The thing that something like Pitch Vision can do, which is absolutely magnificent, is track that, not just from an anecdotal perspective, but from an objective perspective. And we can see how players will develop over time. And it might throw up some really good challenges to our conventional thinking, because how many fast bowlers or leg spinners or whatever the case may be have been written off at the age of 16, 17 This won't happen now, which is really, really exciting because we'll be able to track everybody and also see how people develop over time, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's it's not only being able to track the data of an individual player, but to also get that big, that high level information, isn't it? And to be able to say, we can see at the higher level things that are a lot more, that are, become a lot clearer, like, you know, exactly how much a bowler's workload is before things start to break down, and you can fine tune and tweak things, and you can take a very granular view and look at an individual bowler, say his accuracy over a 10 over bowling spell, but you can also take a big data view and look at all the bowlers over the period of 5 years and say to yourself, well, look, this is what we spotted where the danger points are. This is what we spotted where the points are, where maximum pace starts to come through.
Yeah, you begin to see trends and correlations, don't you, which then inform us as coaches when we're designing practices for future generations. And something like Pitch Vision does provide that data foundation that we can do that off of. Rather than it being one coach's view, it gives the opportunity for a number of coaches to look at the data, a number of analysts to cut the data effectively for us to come up with informed views based on facts and based on trends and correlations, rather than just plucking something out of the sky, which has been something that, you know, is still useful every now and again, but it needs to be balanced against that objectiveness that Pitch Vision does provide. And that's the advantage that Cricket South Africa have now got over their competitive nations.
The other thing, of course, we're talking about bowlers there, and that's a lot of time where you think about Pitch Vision because that's the obvious use of it. But, of course, Cricket South Africa are having the batting studio fitted as well, which tracks the ball after the batsman's hit it, and it tells you, you know, where it's gone and how far it's gone, how high it's gone. How is that going to influence coaching? Or let me ask you that in another way. If you were in that situation, Gareth, where you had a net which suddenly it was tracking everything that happened with the ball after the batsman hit it, how would that change the way that you did coaching?
Well, firstly, you'd have to get me down from my highly excitable levels about having a facility like that into a place where I could actually do some proper coaching, because that would just be amazing, wouldn't it? You know, if us as coaches had that capacity, you'd just get so excited. So firstly, I'd calm myself down. That would probably take me a few months, I think, because it would be probably the most exciting thing that's come into my coaching world in a number of years. And then once I've managed to do that, I would say that every session becomes objective. And I had a session last night, which was probably the best ever session that I've had at Millfield with our first team squad, where they went about it brilliantly. But we were having to guess where fielders were, and they did it very, very well. But inevitably, you're going to have those conversations about, you know, was it out? Did it go for four? All of those sort of things. And this will eradicate that, because not only have you got where the ball goes, but you've also got the ability to set the standard of a fielder, okay, which is fantastic. You know, so if you're looking for an under 15 player who's got no comprehension of how people move and how people field at the top level, wouldn't it be fascinating to say, right, here's your net, here's your field, you're bowling to us, you're batting against a 6-3. You've got a massive gap at cover. You've got two slips of girly, third man point, mid off. And every time they hit the ball, it'll be interesting to see what their perception of what the cover point fielder could do to stop some balls. Because, you know, you put a Paul Collingwood or an AB de Villiers or somebody like that at a point, and the game's different, isn't it? And the pressures are different. So you can start to really replicate the type of cricket and the standard of cricket that they're aspiring to go into. And that can only heighten practice awareness. It can only heighten somebody's ability to adapt into higher levels. And of course, you've got all of this objective data, and they can see the ball going off on their wagon wheels, and they can see how far they've just hit the off spinner out of the ground. And instead of that age old conversation of, oh, it's gone down deep mid on stroke, you know, and the batter saying, that's it, row Z, you know, we actually know, don't we? Which is fantastic. And you know, if we all had that capacity to run nets like that, then think about all of the times that we've had to manage those really crappy conversations that eat into the time that we've got, where we're managing people's expectations. All we'd need to do is just say, that ball's gone 71 metres. Unfortunately, our boundary 75 metres. That means you've been caught. We've got test match fielders out there, or we've got first class fielders on your way, son. What a fantastic capacity that would be for us. And, you know, without being funny, I've got my eye on one of those for Millfield School.
Well, anyone who thinks they are a good judge of whether, you know, with the distance of where a shot goes or whatever, then ask yourself, how many times have you seen someone, you've been watching a game and you've seen someone cream a beautiful shot, and you've either thought to yourself or even gone as far as saying out loud shot, and it's gone for one. That happens a lot. That happens a lot.
Right. Andrew Strauss is the world's worst for shouting out shot, right, when somebody then ends up getting caught. Because he used to sit next to me when he wasn't batting himself, and he'd go, shot, oh no, like that, and have his hand in his hands 2 minutes later because KP's just holed out a deep square or whatever the case. So, you know, if that happens to you at club level, just take some confidence in the fact that the England captain that's lifted two Ashes urns also has done that over the years.
Going back to coaching for a second, the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about this week, Gareth, was that we have teamed up with Harry Shapiro, who is a friend of Pitch Vision Academy. He's a leg spin coach in South Africa, and he started a Association of Leg Spinners, which is a grand idea. And to celebrate that with him, we have offered to all Pitch Vision readers of the newsletter the chance to have a 3-month trial membership of that Leg Spin Association. And so if you coach leg spin or you're a leg spinner, it's definitely worth heading over to pitchvision.com/academy and putting your name down for the trial. There's no obligation to sign up once the trial's finished, but you can have a look and see if it's the type of thing that you want to join in with other leg spinners talking. But it got me to thinking, Gareth, what I know about leg spin, you can fit onto a very small piece of paper. But whenever I see a leg spinner, I always get very excited. I always want them to encourage them and help them become a better player. So if you're not a leg spinner, how do you go about coaching leg spinners?
Well, I think the first point of call is to be patient. I mean, if I can give any bit of advice about leg spinners, it's to be patient. And this goes back to the time where I used to be the bloke that caught the balls behind the stumps to Shane Warne in practice. And it goes back to working with Terry Jenner for a number of years. It goes back to looking actually at how the best leg spinners in the world over a period of the last 50 years have actually developed. And there's a trend. You know, a lot of them come onto the scene and do really, really well at club level or district level or state level or county level and then disappear for a bit. And then they come back and they end up doing their best work between the ages of about 27, 28. And through to their mid-30s. And that's not a rare trend. That is the trend. So you look at somebody like Mushtaq Ahmed, who burst onto the scene in the 1992 World Cup, then went into the wilderness a little bit, and then really learnt his skill, really learnt how he could become a fantastic leg spinner, and then ended up playing on until nearly 40, where he was probably bowling as well then as he was when he was 26, 27. So we have to be patient. And I think a lot of time we're looking for that instant answer around 18, 19. Adil Rashid got bunged into the England side when I was working with him, a great lad. And the thing that saved his career is the fact that when his leg spin hasn't worked particularly, his batting has improved, which has now given him the opportunity of time to get his leg spin back on track, and he's beginning to do that. But I don't think that we'll see the best of Adil Rashid as a leg spinner until we get to 28, 29. But fortunately, his batting has given him an opportunity to stay in the game at higher levels, whereas a lot of people haven't. And I think we need to invest time. So that's my first point of call. The second thing is that we can't teach the gift that leg spinners have of being able to use their wrist in the way that they do to get revolutions on a ball. I've never tried to teach anybody that. That is something that they've got. And all my job as a bowling coach is to help them to put that wrist into a position by using their bowling action, a strong bowling action, where they can deliver that ball as consistently as they possibly can. And obviously we know with leg spin, with it being the mechanics that it is, that they're going to bowl long hops, they're going to bowl half volleys, they're going to bowl full tosses. And as captains and as coaches, we have to be patient with that, particularly between the ages of 13 or 11 all the way up to 26, 27, which appears like a huge amount of time, but that is the reality, because the likes of Warne, the likes of Mushtaq, also went through a journey where they just had people being patient with them. So if it was good enough for some of the best in the world, then it's got to be good enough for us. But don't try and teach the gift. because even Terry Jenner, who knew more about it than anybody else I've ever met, didn't try to teach anybody how to spin the ball as a leg spinner. All he looked to do was to put the action in place that allowed that gift to be unleashed. So if I could keep it as simple as that, that's what I would encourage other coaches to do.
Yeah, and the approach that I take is similar to that. I do everything that I can to stop someone who can bowl leg spin from deciding that leg spin's a little bit too tough and they're going to try bowling a little bit of medium pace instead. That's the absolute worst outcome that I can think of for a leg spinner. But that, I think that's, you have to have a certain mentality, don't you, to be a leg spinner, to be able to persevere through those difficult times and make it through, because it's so tempting, especially at lower levels, you know, club school level. It's so tempting. You think, well, I can bowl a little bit of medium pace and get, you know, get decent results with it. So why would I put myself through the turmoil of having to learn this very difficult skill and taking all that time to learn this difficult skill when I can just get some nice results from bowling medium pace? So I guess that's the way that whenever I see a leg spinner, I do everything I can to keep them as a leg spinner. That's my main priority.
Yeah, and I think that's a really valid point you've just made, because it isn't an easy journey. And we've got to tell them things like, who's been hit for more sixes in Test cricket than any other bowler? And, you know, the answer is Shane Warne. Mm. Now, they'll say, oh, that's because he's bowled a lot. But there's been a lot of other bowlers that have bowled more overs than him. Muralitharan being one of them. But, you know, the difference between somebody who bowls off spinners and doozers and somebody who bowls a ball out the wrist is the fact that their margin for errors are likely to be much bigger. The leg spinners' margin for errors are going to be much bigger, but they are going to bowl some shockers as well, which are going to get hit out of the park. So we have to be patient both as coaches and captains, but more importantly, the person that's actually delivering that ball, because you're going to get hit for sixes. You're going to bowl some shockers. All right, but persevere with it, because by the time you get into your middle to late 20s, all of a sudden you'll become the most important person in any cricket team.
Okay, let's leave it there. That's one of the that's one of the planks, I think, of the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. We love the leg spinner. So let's go on to the yes/no round. Three questions. No burners this week to read them, so I'll be in charge of reading the questions. Gareth and I can only say yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Gareth, are you ready for the yes/no round this week?
I certainly am.
First question. Overs under the belt is a myth.
Yes.
Yes. Second question. If too many cooks spoil the broth, then players should seek to reduce the number of coaches they work with.
Yes, probably. Yes.
Yes. Third question. The only prayer of achieving exceptional performance is with utter commitment.
Yes.
Yes. Time now to dip into the mailbag. A couple of questions. And, of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us. You can email them to coach@pitchvision.com. So Rajat's done exactly that. And his question is, is diving thought of as a skill or something that is inborn in a fielder? Do fielders practice diving at higher levels of cricket? Is there a safe technique to dive regardless of the terrain? Grassy versus dry. So, Gareth, Rajat wants to know about diving.
Well, diving is a skill, definitely. And there are different ways to do it. And often that's linked to the way that you operate as a person, the way that you move. So, but it is something irrespective that everybody can work on. And therefore, that defines a skill because you can get better at it. Mm. So the first thing is get out there and practice. The second thing is, and I appreciate a lot of people maybe haven't got ideal lush outfields to practice on, but we don't necessarily need those. So one of the best bits of tools that you can have for outdoors if you're on some hard ground is to get a bit of tarpaulin or a plastic sheet and stick some water over the top, and then when you're diving on it, there'll be less friction and you'll slide across that tarpaulin. And we often see particularly in England, I have to say, at the end of cricket matches where it's hosed it down with rain, that players will run for about 20 yards and then slide across the covers. And effectively, they're doing exactly the same thing as you would do in any diving practice. So get a bit of tarpaulin, get some water on it, and then feed the ball in from really quite close, from sort of like 5 metres, low left, low right, and ask the person to find their own way of catching it. Now, some people will drop their head into the catch and roll. And for anybody that's seen somebody like Peter Moores demonstrate that, we'll see that particular technique. And what that does is that reduces the amount of contact on any given point on the ground, which reduces the jarring. And they come out using that roll, and the ball is nice and safe. And then equally, you might see somebody which is more sort of Peterson-esque in the way that he dives, where they dive long and their hands lead. And then they dive long, and then they'll spread themselves out. So somebody who watched maybe an Adam Gilchrist or an Ian Healy keep wickets, some of those diving catches where they go to dive and they make themselves nice and long, and they dive and they extend their body, and you see their hand being extended after they've taken the catch to increase the range that the force is hitting the ground to dissipate that force across the whole of the body. So there's two ways of catching, one the roll and one the when you let yourself go completely. But on both of those, you can get a bit of tarpaulin, sprinkle some water over it. You get a bit wet, but it's blooming good fun. And make sure you always practice the right side as much as the left, and vice versa as well. Because you'll often find that your technique on one side will be better than the other. And if you do two on one side, then remember the kinesthetics and the feelings that come from that side, and then try and replicate that into the other side. Then you'll start to get a little bit more balance between the two. So that would be my starting point for any diving.
And of course, there's as well as diving sideways, you've got diving forwards. You've got a higher diving catch and a lower diving catch. There's lots of different areas that you can work around, and you can try different things out. I want to pick out a particular point, Gareth, and Rajat was talking about a grassy pitch versus a dry pitch. If you've got a pitch which is going to be more difficult to dive on, where do you draw the line with diving? Would you ever say to someone, look, the conditions are just not conducive to diving today, it's probably best to avoid it?
Yeah, we've done that a few times in the past, and anybody who remembers back to Simon Jones's injury, that's where our experience stemmed from, really. And there's a lot of outfielders around the world that are basically grown with quite high sand content in them to help with drainage. And obviously, they're the ones where if you get your knee caught or your elbow caught in the ground, the elbow or the knee will stay in the ground, and yet the rest of the body will move on past that joint, and that caused Simon's injury effectively. So for example, at the Gabba, where that happened, when we went there in future games, we would encourage our fielders to stay on their feet for as long as possible, and if they were going to dive, then they would dive by making themselves as long as possible rather than as short as possible, which is what Simon did when he went to do that slide and got his knee caught in the ground. So we would go full length or not at all. So that's an example. And you weigh up those conditions in the same way as a batter, you would weigh up the conditions of a particular wicket. And you might do what Steve Waugh did a lot of times and just say, I'm not driving on this wicket, or I'm not going to pull on this wicket, or whatever the case may be. We just say to ourselves, I'm not gonna dive today. I'm gonna stay on my feet as much as possible. And as long as everybody knows that, you know, a bowler can't have a go at you. If we're saying that we'd rather have 11 cricketers fit to fight 50 overs worth of cricket than somebody doing something to themselves and getting injured in the fifth over, as long as everybody buys into that, then you're fine. But that's about communication again, isn't it? It goes back to the age-old thing. But so it's only happened very rarely. But just be aware. Have a little look around. What you've got around you, just a sort of health and safety, you know, test really, to see what is around and use it accordingly. And then similarly, if you get on an outfield where it might be a bit dewy, if you're playing early in the morning or late at night, or if you've just had a rain shower, then you can use that surface, that slick up surface, to really get your slides in and get early slides in, so you get down to ball level. And again, that's a tactic that you can do, which is a contrast to the previous one where it's too dry. Use the moisture as best you can and get down to ball level. And it's a lot of fun, but also you tend to cut off quite a few runs by doing that. So the conditions can work both ways for you.
speaking of fun, when you introduce diving to players, we're talking about ages here, I feel that a lot of people think it's an advanced skill and something that you shouldn't be teaching to people until they get a little bit older. But then you see youngsters throw, if you get a wet outfield, you see youngsters throwing themselves around in a similar way to what you were talking about, Gareth, when people dive around on the covers. So where is that balance? At what age do you think you can start bringing in diving techniques to young cricketers? Is there a limit? Can you just get them throwing themselves around on a wet surface, even at age 8, 9, 10?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. And in many ways, that's a time, because their inhibitions are less, and they're probably a little bit more physically competent than somebody who's in their 20s. Also, they haven't got that fear, have they? You know, that's the thing. And if their mates are all doing it, then they're likely to join in. But if you do find that somebody doesn't like to do it, then all you do is take it down a pace or two with them. So you might get them without a ball just to slide across the tarpaulin or the grass. You might get them to learn to fall from their knees so they get used to hitting the ground, and then build up their confidence in that way, in the same way as we may do reverse chaining with a pull shot, for example. So we build it up bit by bit. But most kids will just chuck themselves into it, and I would say the earlier the better. And also, you don't have to do it in a cricket context, do you? You can just say one day, right, you've done really, really well. We're going to put some water on the tarpaulin, and we're all going to go for a slide across it. Then, 2 weeks later, you can say, right, now what we did a couple of weeks ago was getting you used to going to ground. Okay, it was a bit of fun. But actually, if we introduce a ball at this point, then it's exactly the same concept. And then you'll see that they've got confidence from a previous experience. And then when you put a ball in there, they just fly.
So there we go, Rajit. It is a skill, and it's something you could introduce at any age, and you can work on at any age. And you have to take a little bit of a view when it comes to the surface that you're going to be diving on. But other than that, get on with it, I think is what we're saying, Gareth.
Yeah, absolutely right.
That seems to be another theme of this show, which is emerging. Get on with it.
Correct.
Okay, let's move on to the second question. And it's Minga, who has emailed into the show before. And he's got a detailed question for us, Gareth, so settle down. Minga's saying he has two rep trial games coming up, big matches, and he's playing 50-over games. And from the games, a team will get selected to represent the area. So big pressure stuff. He's a leggy, another leggy, and he's been working on his bowling action so the ball will turn more, but he still bowls short and too wide, inconsistent. I think that's a message we talked about previously. When I really rip the ball, I'm not consistent all the time. I bowl one or two bad balls and over. When I don't rip the ball, I'm really consistent. So the real question is, should I try and rip the ball or just get line and length and turn the ball a little in these matches that I've got coming up? So Gareth, here we go. The classic problem of a leg spinner. He can be a bit more accurate if he doesn't rip it so much. Should he play the percentages in the big game?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important that you find out what your coaches in each of those rep teams that you're trialling for want, really, because, you know, somebody like Duncan Fletcher that I work with was very keen on control. Loved people who could spin the ball, but as we didn't really have too many of those, he wanted control. So any bowler that came into our setup, and Ashley Giles being probably the biggest benefactor of that, you know, worked very hard on giving Fletch that control that he wanted, and as a result ended up playing lots of one day internationals and heck of a lot of test matches very, very successfully. So find out what your coach wants. But also, you know, if you've got the capacity of bowling tight or bowling spin, if they want tight, then chuck in a couple of balls that do spin, because it might open their eyes a little bit and it might put you slightly above the other bloke that bowls flatjacks that's offering control only. So give it your best shot, but a little bit of finding out what your coaches want isn't too bad a thing. Once you're in the side, then obviously you can start to shape their thinking by your performances in practice and in matches. But initially, to get into the side, I'd do a little bit of homework. Don't go too far away from what your strength is. But as you say, you can do a bit of both. But let a couple of gems out of the bag and do what they're looking for. And I should imagine you'll give yourself a really good chance of success in at least one of those two trial opportunities.
And I guess also you can play it a little bit by what's happening in the game situation as well. If you are required to keep it tight by the coach and the captain, then you can you can do that. You can go that way and keep the big ripper in the bag for another time. But then if you've got the chance to come on and bowl you have to bowl a side to victory, then maybe you can take a little bit more risk and start to give it a bit more of a rip.
I think any coach that's worth their salt would want to see somebody who's got the ability to adapt, wouldn't they, between different match situations, different pitch conditions. If it is a game-based thing, then use your brain wisely and use your skills wisely. If the ball's going to rag squen, you've got to bowl them out and you end up doing it, and there's no way you're not going to get into that representative team. So, you know, it's always good to find out what people want and what they're looking for. You know, if you were a Dave Warner and you were trying to get into the England cricket team, then you might want to think about, you know, how you go about your stuff if you're looking to bat one, two or three, because there's a definite shift towards being able to set up the innings in the England setup as it is at present. So a Dave Warner type figure may not feature in Andy Flower's thinking. But a Dave Warner who's just a bit smarter about it and knows what the coach is looking for can probably get into the side and then look to try and change the coach's view by being inside the squad rather than outside the squad, because I think that's a lot easier to do.
And it's nice to have the option of being able to do one or the other. I mean, there's not many spinners in the world who can say to themselves, right, I'm just going to bowl accurate now and not turn it so much, and then the next over then go, well, hang on a minute, if I give this one a little bit more of a rip, I might get this guy out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a rare commodity, isn't it, to have a bowler like that in your ranks. So it's soapbox time, and David is clambering up. It's a big old soapbox today, so he's actually got on one of those little round trampolines that we use for fast bowling sometimes, and he's bounced up on top and he's ready to go. So over to you, mate.
Somebody asked me a question this week, and it was about off-season training, and he said, you know, I'm 14 years old, I want to improve, what should I do? What should I do in the off-season to help myself improve? And it was posted on a forum. It wasn't just me that was asked, it was a few different people who were answering that question, and there were some really good answers posted about different things that somebody of that age could do, and some really useful advice, some silly advice as well, and some useful stuff. But the key thing for me, the key question for me, which nobody asked him, was what is it that you want to achieve? Because you have to decide where you're going to end up before you can get there. It's like going out for a drive without deciding where you're going to drive to. You have to know what your final destination is before you can get there. So if anyone's out there, off-season, in-season, and they're thinking to themselves, I want to improve, the first question that you should ask yourself is, what is your goal? Okay, so that is the end of the show for another week. We're just wrapping up, packing things away, getting ready to put the podcast back in its box. But before we go, of course, in the time-honoured tradition, we have to give away a prize. And last week, of course, Mark Garraway was generous enough to give away two online coaching courses courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. I don't know whether that's going to happen ever again, but we're going to find out in a moment. So, Garraz, the two questions, one from Rajat about diving, the other from Minga about leg spin. Which one did you prefer this week?
Well, last week I said it was a once-in-a-lifetime, and it is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime. Two great questions this week. I think we're inspiring people to ask even more detailed questions. And thank you to Minga, who's got a great name, and I've probably been out of a few in my time. But unfortunately, this week, you're not going to win it. And because I'm such a fan of fielding, Rajat, your diving question has hit the spot. So congratulations and enjoy your course.
That's quite a death match, isn't it? Fielding versus leg spin.
It is. It was. You're absolutely right.
Well, congratulations, Rajat. Have a look at some of the online coaching courses we've got on fielding there and see if there's anything that will help you improve your fielding or the fielding of those that perhaps you coach or play alongside. Now, Garraz, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show, what would they need to do to have their question asked?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, and if you do that and your question gets read out, you've got a good chance of winning the prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. If you don't want to email or you don't want to phone, then you can also find us on Twitter at Pitch Vision Acad. Facebook. We also hang out there, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can subscribe to the show. Of course you can. It's a podcast. That's what you do with podcasts. If you're not subscribed to the show, what are you doing? You're missing out. It comes out every Friday, and you can do that in iTunes. Just head over there, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find all the details by clicking on the subscribe button. And if you don't want to subscribe using iTunes, you can use something else. Just go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll see the details for subscribing and whatever podcatcher you want to catch your pod with. So that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. And until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.